hear me in the back without a mic? Can you hear me? Back people, can you hear me? Can you hear me clearly? It's great, okay. So thank you, Laura, for that beautiful introduction. My name is Rabbi Menachem Nissel. I work for NCSY and yeah, I do all kinds of interesting things. But one of the things that I do a lot is traveling. Oh, the air has just come on. Phew. No, seriously, I thought I was going to teach in a sauna, which is like kind of awkward when you're wearing a jacket. The point I want to make is, I spend a lot of time on planes, and the main reason why I go on planes is so that I can get plane stories. This is how I always start off my classes, with a plane story, and something incredible happened. Anyone here from the Midwest? Okay, so I'm sorry to hear that, but you should just know that I did a NCSY... Oh, no, I should not have said that. Okay, hello. That was off the record. So I just want to say the following. This, I think it was February, I flew from Newark Airport to Kansas City to do a Kansas City Midwest Shabbos. And I'm sitting over here, and next to me on one of these, like, you know, these planes that go like this. So next to me is this lady, and I strike up a conversation. I said, what do you do? And she says, I'm actually a stewardess off duty. So for me, this was incredibly exciting because you know how you have like this relationship with a stewardess that is always intrinsically awkward, right? You never know whether you can ask for an extra glass of water because they may kill you or something like that. So here I am, I'm actually next to a stewardess and she's off duty and I can actually ask her about her life, what she does, to understand a little bit, to get into like the mindset of what it's like to be a high school dropout, I mean to be a stewardess, and to work for United Airlines. So I asked her her name, her name is Janice, something like that, and then I asked her my favorite question. I said, do you have a great story to tell me? Like, what was the most exciting or interesting thing that ever happened to you working as a stewardess? So she had a great story. This is like an incredibly amazing story, and I'm so excited to share this with you. Apparently, according to American law, if you are disabled, so you have the right to bring onto your plane a service animal. So, which means if you see a person that comes in on the net blind, they can demand the right to bring in a little dog that's called a guide dog, and the plane cannot refuse that animal. Are you with me? Okay? So, once upon a time, Janice was on a United Airlines plane, and someone came in, Nebuch, without arms. And this person needed, obviously, a service animal, and he came with a service monkey. So United Airlines was completely, and I'm always wondering why people take notes. You just wrote down
it's a funny story. I want to keep it to tell
you. Okay, great. Okay, a service monkey. So this cute, adorable monkey comes on, holding on to our hero, who Nebuch, unfortunately, has no arms. And it is a bizarre sight. You can imagine the visual. And then this gentleman sits down, and the plane goes off, and the monkey goes berserk. The monkey starts literally swinging around, jumping on people, touring the whole place, terrorizing everyone up and down. And the stewardesses did not know what to do. So eventually they decided they had no choice. And one of the stewards tackled the monkey and knocked this cute little monkey down to the ground and threw him into the toilet. And that's it. There's only one toilet on this plane, and they could hear the screams of the monkey banging against the sides of the thing, trying to get me out. Somebody said, you know what? This monkey, I know exactly what the problem is. Anyone want to guess what the problem was? No, that would be a Miss Lally girl. No, thank you. What exactly? But the monkey in the environment, 10,000 feet above the ground, does not deal with the air supply in the plane the same way that you and I do. So you and I, we get on a plane, and we all know that once you get on the top, they basically switch off all the air vents, so you end up breathing in each other's Ebola. And basically, basically that's it. That's why you notice that towards the end you're kind of like floozy, because you know, it's a little headachy, because that's what's happening over here. But monkeys do not work that way. So somebody screamed, "Give the monkey oxygen!" And they brought an oxygen mask, they opened up the bathroom, and the monkey was sitting there like that, and they put it on his face. The monkey was calm and happy for the rest of the flight. And that's the end of the story. So I like the story just because I think it's the funniest visual, just seeing a monkey driving on crazy on a plane. But then I thought about it, and I realized that this could be an opening story, because a little bit gives over what I want to say today, is that Jews are monkeys. We're not literally monkeys, we're not actually monkeys, but we are the proverbial monkey in the story. Because what happens is that if life is a highway, as the country song says, and if we are flying on this plane, and this is the plane of life, so monkeys do not exactly do what everyone else is doing on the plane, we need our own source of oxygen to survive. And that is exactly why you people, in the most bizarre and crazy and yet beautiful way, have decided, you know what? I could have spent the summer going with the family to the Caribbean. I could have been, you know, hitching through Europe or doing something crazy. But you know what? Let me get some oxygen into my being. Let's learn Torah. Let's come to the Holy Land of Israel and breathe in some oxygen. And this is exactly the presentation I want to say to you today. I want to talk a little bit about this oxygen. Jews are different from the rest of humanity in this very, very special way. The way I like to say it, I always like to say that humanity, if they want to go from place A to place B, how do we go? You can walk, you can take a car, you can take a train, you can fly. But how does a Jew travel? And here I'm going to say something very deep, and I hope you agree with me. A Jew travels with questions. That's how we go through this world, with questions. Actually, the healthiest thing that you can learn this summer is to ask good questions. And if you ask good questions, you grow and you change and you become the person that you're supposed to be and you live the life that you're supposed to live. So every night, I actually put away 1 hour of my evening to answer questions. Any person here in this room who makes a choice to, where's Tamar? She sends me Tamar Weinberg. She's probably not here. She'll be doing something crazy. But she, there we go. Okay, there she is. Okay, she sends me questions. I'm happy to answer them. I'm happy to answer any person's questions. I'm on Facebook. I'm on regular missile at NCSY or mmissile at Gmail. If you do not have a life, you can follow me on Twitter. My name is, unfortunately, Mizzle for Shizzle. Don't ask questions. But the point is that every night I spend an hour answering questions. I love doing that. And then every Friday I travel with my rabbi, Rav Moshe Shapiro, and then I ask him my questions. And that's how we grow. There's never, ever an end to our questions. That's healthy. That's the way it's supposed to be. Fascinating. There's one night in the Jewish calendar where Jews give over, literally they pass over everything they believe in and everything they stand for to the next generation. And the methodology of the evening is through questions. What am I referring to? Seder night. Seder is built around questions. When you ask questions, firstly, you set the agenda. This is what's on your mind. And secondly, when you ask questions, so the answer becomes yours. In other words, it's something you struggle for. It's something you make a little part of yourself. So what I'm going to do now, for the next 40 minutes, I'm going to say over some ideas. I recognize that the ideas I'm going to say over are going to force you to think. This is the intelligent group over here. It's going to force you to think. It's going to force you to ask questions. I'm going to walk out the door, and you can spend the rest of the summer driving your advisors crazy, and you will make me happy. Make them work. Seriously, make a time. Give them a little bit of hard work over there. Drive them crazy. They should know the answers to all your questions. If not, they can ask me, and I can ask my rabbi, and so on and so forth. That's the way a Jew travels. So, if you don't like what I'm going to say for the next 40 minutes, it's okay. You don't have to agree with the points I'm making. You don't have to be happy with the ideas I'm presenting. The only thing I'm asking you to do is to be intellectually open-minded and to think about it. And if you want, you can come out with your own conclusions your way, and that's healthy. The idea is to do things your way. Every so often, you look in the mirror, you see you have a unique face. Every so often, look at the girl next to you. Notice how different she looks from you. Secretly, you can think to yourself, thank God. But the reason why you look different from the girl next to you because your questions have to bring you to your own unique place and your own unique connection with Hashem and your own unique self-fulfillment. So I'm going to share with you a story, and the story is purposely disturbing. Are we ready for this? Can we do this?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do it. So about 3 months ago, I was in a city called Prague. So what I do is, one of the things I do, just because I like to party. I like to have fun. I'm addicted to good times. So I figured out, how do I get free trips to Europe? I like Europe. I think it's an amazing, beautiful continent, pretty cities. Just till tomorrow, we're going there. My wife now going, leading a trip to Slovenia and Croatia and all kinds of these bizarre and exotic places. And the reason why I do this is because, yeah, I get a free vacation, and all I have to do is speak. And I like giving over Torah classes and Torah ideas and studying Jewish history. Prague is definitely one of the most incredible, beautiful cities. Anyone been to Prague? Okay, tell us. In one moment, tell us of Prague. What are your memories of Prague? There we go. What's your name, please?
Michelle Weingarten.
Michelle Weingarten. Said it beautifully. I mean, you ask me, when you come to Prague, the first thing you think you're like in a Disney setting. Is that right? Remember, it's gorgeous. And there's so much history, Jewish, non-Jewish, everything you want is in there. And I spoke 3 months ago to a group from Detroit. Anyone from Detroit? No one I can make fun of? Good. Okay. So this group from Detroit, they're all middle-aged. Now, that's an awful thing to say, but that's what I am. I'm middle-aged. I've married off a bunch of kids. It's a certain stage in your life where you become like middle-aged. And these are like middle-aged people, and they're all in their 40s and 50s. And basically, I am speaking 10 times over 3 days. And at the end of the third day, we go on what's called a party boat on the Charles River. And everyone goes to like the top floor, the deck over there, and there's music playing, and there's beer, grown-ups. Okay, well, they're allowed to do that. Okay, beer and wine, whatever's going on. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go on the deck below. And anyone that has questions can come up to me. And I knew that people would come up to me. I just had this feeling because it's a very intelligent group. This lady comes along, her name's Amy. And Amy's there with two of her friends. And she says to me the following question. She says, Rabbi Nissel, you actually called me my first name. She says, Menachem, that was cool. Menachem, I want to ask you the following question. She said, we've heard you at least 10 times over the last couple of days. Somehow, we notice that you always weave in the following phrase. And this you should write down. You always weave in the following phrase. You always say, quote, Jews do not believe in death. There we go. Said it. Jews do not believe in death. I just throw it out as many times as I can. I say it passionately. For example, we went to the Beis HaKvaros. We went to the Jewish cemetery. There's a famous rabbi, the Maharal of Prague. He's buried over there. And I said, we are about to go to the most alive place in the whole Czech Republic. We are zombies compared to the aliveness of the people in this cemetery. They're not dead. They are not with us physically, but their bodies and their souls are still as alive as ever. They are temporarily disconnected, but they're alive. No one dies. We don't believe in death. So she said to me the following. She said, Rabbi, I have no idea what you're talking about. I grew up in Temple, in the Reform Temple. And all of us over here, we grew up, our minister, our rabbi told us that when you die, it's over. It's the end. They put you 6 feet under the ground and you are worm food. She didn't actually use that phrase, but that's basically what she meant. It's over with. So when you die, you've got like, you know, you're 70, 80, 90, and maybe 100 years here on this world, and then it's over with. Boom. You die, it's finished. You're 6 feet out of the ground. What do you mean when you keep on saying that Jews do not believe in death? So I looked at her and I said to her, Amy, let me ask you a personal question. You believe in God? She goes, of course I believe in God. I said, do you believe that God is good? He said, yeah. And the word God comes from the same word as good. God is amazing. God is great. He's wonderful. Do you believe that God is all-powerful? He's all-wise. Do you believe that he is the genius that created this beautiful sunset? You can look outside now. Look, gorgeous sunset that's going on. He created things as beautiful as life, children, animals, service monkeys, everything. God does everything. He's incredible. He's awesome. He can create anything he wants. He created heaven and earth, the planets, countries, all kinds of different creatures to give us pleasure, food that is beautiful to taste and beautiful to enjoy, different scents and fragrance. Everything is God. He's all, he's amazing. So he said, of course I believe in that. Okay, let's go through this slowly. So God can do all these things. He's incredible. He's amazing. He can do absolutely everything possible. Now let's work this through. It seems to be that he messed up in one huge area, which is basically us, the centerpiece of creation. Our lives are a huge, dismal failure. What do you mean? I'll tell you exactly. Let's take the average life. So again, this is nothing personal, but if I could take the average girl in this room and describe to you your life, on average, if you were a statistic, this is your life. Basically, what do you do during your teens? Basically, if I'm not mistaken, you guys do two things. You look at your phones and you do homework. Is that right? Let's summarize a decade. Your 20s, you're not going to get this until you get there. Your 20s are going to be this big, dizzy blur. And then you hit 30. You turn 30, finally, you settle down. You get a job, you get married, you have a couple of kids, you get a house, you get a car, and then you hit 40. And 40 is when the fun begins. 40, the first thing that happens is that you get a pot belly, you get another chin. You can't stand the music that your kids listen to. But what can you do? You hit 50, and then the real fun begins. Because when you turn 50, your doctor will say to you, well, I'm sorry, you just hit 50. Legally, you are obligated to go through all kinds of testing. It is the decade of testing. It is the decade of the colonoscopy. I will not explain what that is. You can ask your parents if you're bored. It gets really exciting. It is, they test you for skin cancer. They test you for every single part. They go invade every single part of your body looking for things that are falling apart. When you turn 50, suddenly the things that went, can you hear me? When you turn 50, so those things that you used to love as a kid and was a huge, big treat as a kid, suddenly it scares you. And the punishments that you give to little children is actually a goal for a person in their 50s. So when you tell your child, he says, I'm sorry, kiddo, I'm afraid you're going to have to get an early night and miss the party. So for us 50-year-olds, yeah, you get to miss the party, you get an early night. It's actually a goal when you turn 50. You turn 60, and then it's really, really downhill. You have your first operation. They call it a procedure, but it's really an operation. The music that your kids listen to, you really, really, really can't stand, but who cares, because you can't hear it anyhow. And then you turn 70. And 70, your parents suddenly hear their children say, you know, mom and papa, they're getting a little bit of a burden. And before you know it, they send you off to South Florida. And you spend the rest of your life in some godforsaken shopping mall, walking around at 5 in the morning looking for the latest experience in soft yogurt. And every so often you scream out, how come the kids don't call? And then once a week, you look forward to the mahjong meet where you play cards with your friends and you find out who of your friends are still alive. And then you turn 80. When you turn 80, you will have a stroke. You spend the rest of your life being taken care of by a nurse that you call mama. She's Jamaican. Everyone hates her. And you live happily ever after. And that's it. That's your life in a nutshell. Now, guess what, ladies? I just described to you the life of an upper-class American. People who have money, people who live the good life, people who live the lives that we want to have. Let's not talk about the other 95% of God's failures, of people who live miserable lives of sickness and poverty, and the lives are falling apart in every single direction. So I turned to Amy, and I said to Amy, us Jews, we don't believe in the wall to come. Us Jews, we are obsessed with the wall to come. It is the only thing that makes sense. We don't believe in death. When a person dies, it's not over. When a person dies, a very, very simple thing that happens. Your body is not dead. Your body goes into the ground just like putting a seed in the ground. And it gets cleansed and it gets prepared for the world to come. Your soul goes into the higher world. And there it enjoys an experience that is similar to the world to come, but it's not the real thing. Because you are a body and a soul. And then guess what? A time will come. And this is central to everything the Jews believe in. It is part of every single one of our prayers. The time will come when we come back right here. Because the world to come is not some magical Star Trek episode. Din, 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 din. You know, you go off far away to some distant planet, and then you arrive, and there's like Moshe Rabbeinu and the Hobos and the Amos, and lots of Japanese people making you like fresh sushi. Oh, we make Leviathan sushi. No! That's not what happens. Olam HaBa is right here. And we live forever and ever and ever and ever. And it just gets better and better and better and better. And that's the essential goal of everything that we believe in. So I looked at Amy. And I said to Amy, do you get it? Doesn't it make sense to you? So I want to tell you something. I've been teaching now. It's kind of like, I just said this over to my wife. My wife has a sweatshirt that is a Michlelet sweatshirt from 20 years ago. That's how old we are. It's a 20-year-old Michlelet sweatshirt. When Michlelet used to be in the Bay, before even Mrs. Yudin was born, or whatever it is. It's like, it's a long, long time ago. And you know what? I've been teaching for a long, long time. I never, ever saw a reaction like this. Amy from Detroit, who had till that point believed that when you die, it's over. What she did was the following thing. She put her head down, basically between her knees, and she started shaking all over. I've never seen someone shake from something I've said. And I said a lot of terrible things in my life. And she was shaking all over. And she looked up suddenly, and I see that her eyes are red. And she looks at me and she says the following words. Rabbi, so what now? That's what she said to me. Rabbi, so what now? And I'm thinking to myself, how sad this is that a woman in her 50s has to ask the question, what now? Because she had for the first time an epiphany, an understanding that when you die, you don't really die. Jews don't die. It's just a small little night between 2 days. It's just a teeny wee little blip. And then it's over with, and you carry on forever and ever, like we see every morning when we say Modani, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the returning of a soul that's forever in a body, that the body decays while we're here in this world, but we get it back, and we get back the body that we earned, and it's forever and ever and ever. And I'm thinking to myself, how crazy that is to have to explain to someone in their 50s, when you're literally, you know, you're over the halfway mark. You're deep into your life. At that point then, to realize all that you've done till now, you've been living a lie. It's a crazy, crazy thing. We believe in the world to come. Every teeny weeny thing that you do is different. Because what do you do in life? You've got to choose a career. So how do you choose a career? The answer is, the career is not what you enjoy. The career is not what makes the most money. When you choose a career, the first question you ask, how does this fit in with my life that is preparing myself for the world to come? How do you choose a college? You don't choose the college that has the best reputation for academics. You choose a college that has the best reputation that you can grow for the important things in life, for the things that are real. How do you choose a future husband? So you don't choose, you know, the most handsome person on the block that makes you laugh. You choose a person that can be a partner and someone that you can build something that's real, because that partner is with you in this world and the next world forever and ever and ever. It's crazy. From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep, the Torah gives you guidelines. The Torah gives you connectors. The Hebrew word for connector is a mitzvah, from the word tzav, to connect. ways to connect to the world to come, ways to connect to infinity, ways to live out this big idea that you live forever and ever and ever and ever. Okay, so I'm trying to think what you're thinking now. I assume that I haven't taught you something that's really, really new. Maybe I'm a little more blunt, and maybe a little clearer to you, but that's it. That's what our lives are all about. But some of you are thinking to yourself, you know, Rabbi Nissal, you're giving me this like airy-fairy stuff. The world to come, when you die, your body splinches, and part of it goes under the ground, part of it goes up to heaven, stuff like that. Heaven is not a place that you want to stay. Gan Eden is only a temporary place. But after you come back, and you're reunited, your body and your soul, and you live here forever, and what do you do? What's it like? It sounds incredibly boring. It's incredibly difficult for most of us because we grew up in the Christian West, and they picture the world to come as you're on some kind of a cloud. And you see that with a harp. I actually once was on an NCSY Shabbaton. This was a Southern Region Shabbaton. Where are you guys? Southern Region people? There we go. So this was Tennessee, the mountains are, and you know, took them out. What they do Shabbatons, I'm going to one in this February. It's in, somebody help me, what's the name of that place where they do Shabbatons in the mountains in Tennessee? Whatever. It's a very, very Christian place. And I had a taxi driver take me to the airport there. And she just kept on telling me about the God of the Christians and how you got to believe in him and so on and so forth. And then she told me, said, you know, if you don't believe in Jesus, you're not going to get the world to come. So I asked her, what's the world to come like? And she said to me, you got to be with Jesus forever and ever and ever. I said, okay, I just want to be respectful. I said, you know, there's billions and billions of people who are on this planet. How does it actually work out? So what do you, like, you make an appointment to be with him, and like, when you get like the one-on-one once every like 50 years, 10 minutes. So I said it sort of nicely, respectfully, and clearly she was a little bit puzzled. Yeah, this doesn't really make sense. But I'm not here tonight to knock other religions. I'm here tonight to basically say that Judaism has a totally different view of what the world to come is all about. Do you guys want to know what it's going to be like? Would you like me to describe to you something that you can actually picture in your minds? What do you say? Okay, I'm always picking you tonight. What's your name? Rachel, would you like to be able to taste a little bit of what it is, the world to come, so you can be excited about it? Rachel wants to be excited. Where are you from?
The Five
Towns. The Five Towns. Which one?
Woodmere.
So why don't you say Woodmere? It doesn't make a difference. You end up eating on Central Avenue either way. So, Manhattan. Whoa, okay. It's a lot of traveling, Rachel. A lot of traveling every morning. What can I tell you? The point I want to make is that Racheli wants to feel it just a little bit. Well, guess what? It's not such a big deal. You can feel it. You can actually feel it once every 7 days. Whoa, you guys have guessed it already, right? I can see it. This is like the smart section over here. Once, they sit in the front, and they need to be near the books. So once every 7 days, you taste what's called Me'ain Olam Haba, a taste of the world to come. It's called Shabbos. Shabbos. The world goes back to zero. The way it was when it was first created. The way it was before the problems began. And you start a Shabbos with a very simple ceremony. You or your mamas, you light two candles. The first candle is called the switch-off candle. What do you switch off? You switch off 6 days of noise. 6 days of playing with these things, these little addictions. Ah, my precious. Okay? That's a, you got it, okay?
Got it.
So, okay, that's, this is it. You switch these things off. And everything that gives you stress, you're not allowed to think about. No school, no homework, no exams. All the struggles of life is put on hold for 24 hours. And then you switch on another candle. And that candle is like taking a deep breath of that oxygen that our monkey friend took at the beginning of my presentation. And you enter into a world of spirituality. So what actually happens, says Racheli? What do you actually do? You do kind of things that begin with the letter F, like food, and friends, and family, and fashion. Things that give you what the rabbis call oneg. Oneg means physical, earthly pleasures that people like to do when they want time to stand still. So that's it. You will know that you could go to the most exciting thing in the world. Let's imagine you went to the most exciting, what is your favorite concert, or you go to your favorite restaurant, or anything that is that the world tells you, pay lots of money for this. If you can do the same thing with someone that you love, then it's a totally different experience. When you're with someone and you feel that closeness, you can enjoy a moment where time stands still. And with your family, you sit there and you enjoy this incredible, delicious food. In the theoretical world, everything has been done during the 6 days of the week. So now you can just enjoy eating it, enjoy the pleasures of eating it. You're wearing clothing that makes you feel good about yourself, with your family, with your friends, the people you love most. And then what do? You sing music. Everyone loves music. You sing songs. But that, theoretically, you could create any day of the week. What makes Shabbos unique? Because Shabbos, you do all of these things with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the point. You do it with God. The trick of making Shabbos, that you're not just a Shomer Shabbos, you don't just keep Shabbos, but you make Shabbos holy, is to how to figure out taking these physical, earthly, animalistic pleasures that everyone enjoys, but you do it with Hashem. And that's why you have to study Shabbos, Shabbat. You study it on a deep level to understand how to squeeze it like a lemon, to bring out this deep, intense spirituality that gives you enough for the next 6 days, enough fuel to keep you focused, that a Jew lives forever and ever and ever, because on Shabbos, you feel that time stands still. I'm going to tell you a little secret. I'm going to ask you, please, 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 do not tell this to my wife, although she secretly knows. Come on, where's your sister? Okay, where is she? Okay, this is like a deal. Don't tell her. If you meet my wife next year, you're not telling her, okay? Every Friday night, I live a crazy life. Those of you that do actually choose to keep in connection with me, so you'll see that I'm answering emails at midnight, all the way till 2 or 3 in the morning. And in the mornings, I get up and I keep going. So I'm constantly exhausted, constantly pushing myself. Shabbos, Friday night, I come out of shul. And in Harnof, I live in Harnof in Yerushalayim. For a couple of moments, I like to enjoy time standing still. I don't go straight home, because the moment I enter the house, my wife's going to say, we're starving. You know, stop singing Shalom Aleichem. All the guests are here already. That's it. So for a few moments, I just look at the beautiful Jerusalem hills, and I let time stand still. Maybe I'm with a friend. We'll say over a thought from the Parsha. But it's those moments that I crave when time stands still, and I remind myself that I am eternal, that I will never die, that I will live forever and ever and ever. Just this morning, it's interesting, and who from the advisors over here learned with Rabbi Cohen? Tomorrow, there's a few of you, okay? There's about 3 or 4 of you, of your advisors. Is a friend of mine, Rabbi Cohen. I used to babysit for him when I grew up in London. Rabbi Cohen lost his father this morning. And Rabbi Cohen spoke, and he gave an obituary, it's called a Hesped, for his father. And he said that King Solomon, in his wisdom, has a whole section of contrast. There's a time to cry, a time to laugh, a time to build, a time to break things down. But then he says, it says, ace lispod, the ace lirkod. There's a time to give over an obituary for someone that dies, and there's a time to dance. And that's the only place where King Solomon, Shlomo, uses the letter lamed. Said Rabbi Cohen this morning, the lamed means that the lamed of lirkod and the lamed of lispod is unique and special, because all the other contrasts can never happen at the same time. You can't cry and laugh at the same time. You can't build and destroy at the same time. Everything has its own unique time. But when a person dies, it's the only time when you can have, down here, people are crying, and people are saying hespedim, and people are saying over the great virtues of the person's life. But upstairs, It's a time of dancing, because the soul goes upstairs, and all the angels come to greet that person, and they're dancing with that soul. It's a tremendous joy when a person dies, and you suddenly go up to the higher realms, and your body goes down to be cleansed and to be fixed. And then you realize why the rabbis, in their genius, called the Hebrew word for a womb is called a kever. A womb is called a burial place. Because when you came out of your mama's womb, so you actually came out of a place that is compared to when you put a body into the ground. So when you seed a womb, out of it comes a child. When you seed the ground with a grown-up person that lived a full life, you're once again putting something into a womb, and it comes out forever and ever and ever. So you have Shabbos. It's an incredible thing for Shabbos to taste it. So what I want to do is, I want to close this presentation because I want to hear your questions. I want to hear if you're prompted to ask me anything good. I want to finish up and share with you just a little story. My whole life I've been teaching in yeshivas. So you know me as a seminary teacher, but that's half my day. The other half a day, I teach boys. And I used to teach in a yeshiva called Or Samach, Derech Or Samach. I taught there for 7 years. It was a kid there called Mikey Sharfer. And Mikey Sharfer came from a place called Toronto. I know from Toronto. Are you serious? No Canadians? No one to make fun of? Anyhow, says whatever. There's a city called Toronto. And North Toronto, there's like a suburb, there's a little township called Vaughan. Horrible name. Something like a German who has trying to clear it. Vaughan. Okay, whatever. So the point is that this place, Vaughan, is where Mikey grew up. He grew up, technically speaking, Orthodox. But the last time he did anything Orthodox was on his 13th birthday. He went to the synagogue, he had his bar mitzvah, and after that he never touched his tefillin. And after that, he never went back to the synagogue. He never prayed. He didn't keep Shabbos. Nothing. Zero. Zilcho. And round about, when he turned 17, the local old age home asked Mikey for a favor. What was that favor? He says, Mikey, look, we want to make a minion in the old age home for the old folks. Will you come and join us? And Mikey could not say no. He's like, he's got a good heart. The only problem with Mikey is that Mikey, over the weekends, had a particular thing that he liked to do. So, I don't know what music that you guys listen to. Whatever. And it's all awful. Whatever, you know, they're Zane. I just learned a new word. In my last trip, I learned Zane. Oh my gosh. You know, how terrible. Yeah, Zane. What is it? Like, it's a name you give to your dog. But the point is, whatever, it's Zane. The girl that told me about it actually had a crush on him. I don't know who I'm talking about. But I understand that there used to be a band called One Direction, now they're Many Directions. But the point is, you have your musical taste, whatever you're into. But he was not into that at all. He was into the heavy stuff. So I grew up in London in the 70s, which actually created this whole genre called heavy rock. I didn't know, ask your dad. I grew up going to things like Led Zeppelin and whatever, it's Pink Floyd. Those are the bands that I grew up. So he used to listen to like the extreme version of heavy music, like bands called Eat Your Mother's Liver and stuff like that. Like they're really extraordinarily like loud, crazy industrial rock. That's what he called it, industrial rock. So you go in there, you know what I mean? Stones, and you go on the music, the whole thing. Just sit there and you're rocking away for hours and hours. And he used to do that every Friday night. And then he used to sleep till Sunday. How's he going to go Shabbat morning and help the old folks? Because you know what? I'll just go, you know what I mean? Like a zombie. I'll just go, I'll do my best. I'll try and do whatever I can. That's what he did. He went there, and every Shabbos morning, from 9 to 11, he would open up an obstacle sitter, and he found it fascinating. It's the first time he's looking at these ideas. It was so interesting. Every so often he would say amen here and there, and that's what he would do. And he started to like his new life. His new life would have 2 hours a week of Shabbos, 2 hours a week of spirituality. And then one day, the day came. Mikey thinks to himself and says, hey, wait a second. Is this real or is this not real? All this Shabbos, a taste of the world to come, all these rules of how to experience it, is it real or is it not real? So he starts to do his research, and he figures out it's one of two things. Either I'm going to keep Shabbos, or I'm not going to go and spend 2 hours a week with a bunch of old folk. I've got to find out, is this real or not real? And he says, you know what? I'm going to keep Shabbos. I'm going to try and keep Shabbos. He learns the rules. He pumps himself up. He is going to keep Shabbos for the first time since he turned Bar Mitzvah. It's exciting. Rachel, is it exciting? See? So here's what happens over here. He's all pumped up. It's Thursday night. He is about to keep his first Shabbos, and there's his phone call. Now, I can't do a Canadian accent. I can do almost any accent, but not Canadians. Mikey, you're not going to believe this. I have tickets for you for the most incredible band ever, Eat Your Mother's Brains. And Mikey's going, oh my gosh, I've been waiting forever to hear that group. Like, is that, it's too much for him. The big test, the moment of truth, Mikey fails. Friday night, he goes and he watches whatever, you know, Eat Your Mother's Brains, and he blows himself away, and that's it. It's too much for him. And he's depressed. He can't do it. It's too hard for him. He can't live this double life. And then one day, it occurs to him, there's a middle way. Haley, there's a middle way. What's that middle way? The middle way is very, very simple. It's, you know, there's Orthodox, there's Reform, there's Conservative, there's Reconstructionist. Why can't there be Mikey's way? I am going to keep Shabbos 2 hours a week. What is the big deal? Who says I'm wrong? I'm going to keep a Mikey Shabbos. From 9 to 11, I keep Shabbos. That's it. What do you say, Rachel? It's an idea. It's a strategy. Okay? Raise eyebrow from Rachel. We're good. We're good to go over here. We are good to go. So this is incredible. This is incredible. He's about to keep his first Mikey Shabbos. I'm telling you this. What I'm about to tell you is true. Because if you don't believe what I'm about to say to you, it's true. I can show it to you on YouTube. Because what I'm about to say to you is actually now on YouTube. It is Friday morning. Mikey is at home doing something incredibly bizarre. He's watching the History Channel. I don't even know what the History Channel is. But History Channels are for grandpas. America at war. The invasion of South Italy. So, you know, grandpa gets sick. He was there, you know, and he gets all excited. Oh, there I am, there's my friend Joe. So the point is that Mikey is watching. It's a program about how Jews came to America at the beginning of the 20th century. How Jews settled in the United States of America. And there in the middle, there's this following clip. Now, if you write this down, where are you? Write this down. If you write the word Munkach, M-U-N-K-A-T-C-H, and then he writes, I think it's 1930, la, 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 something. 1934, I think it is. He puts something like that. You will see a clip of the Munkacher Rebbe, a man on fire. This person with these fiery eyes, with his big beard. He looks like, you know, he just came out of the mountain with the Ten Commandments. And he is in Munkacher at a wedding, and there's this American crew, and they're interviewing him. And they say, Rebbe, give a message to the Jews in America. Just one moment, please. Give a message to the Jews in America. And he screams in the top of his voice, in Yiddish, in the subtitles. You can see this. He's screaming, and Mikey is watching this on his couch, in his living room, in Vaughan, in North Toronto. And the Rebbe screams and says, Heilige Brüder in America, holy brothers in America, Heilige Schwestern, holy sisters in America. It's not enough to go to shul on Shabbos morning to keep Shabbos. You have to keep the whole of Shabbos. And Mikey said, going, oh my God, someone from the dead is screaming at me. And then he says, and then the Rebbe says, and you think you keep Shabbos? Nay. Shabbos keeps you. And then the clip ends, and Mikey is going crazy. Someone from the dead is telling him it's not enough to keep 2 hours. At that moment then, Mikey becomes Shomer Shabbos. And not only that, you can actually see him, you can follow him. We're friends on Facebook. Mikey Sharfer is his name. He has married, beautiful children. He came to Har Samah. He's living happily ever after. Why am I telling this story? A, it's a great story. But the message. is that I want you, at least over here, to do two things. Number one, when it comes to Shabbos. So here we are, 5 days left to Shabbos. It's incredible. You know Shabbos. Squeeze Shabbos for everything it is, to taste the world to come. Know what it's like to switch up all the noise of the week. By the way, especially during exam time, because it's not going to help you. It's not going to help you. You never ever need to read anything to do with the 6 days of the week on Shabbos. On Shabbos, curl up on your favorite couch and read, if you have no life, you know, just read once again, book 4, Harry Potter, whatever it is, okay? whatever's out there. Just do it. The Vampire Diaries, whatever it is, okay? This is so sad. The point I'm trying to make is, whatever you enjoy, just don't let the 6 days of the week stress you. And taste a little bit of the world to come. Taste friendship. Taste family. Taste good food. And then know that what it is to give it over with Hashem, with the Torah and the Tefillos, and that feeling of spirituality you can squeeze out of the day from Shabbos. And now I come full circle. And never, ever, ever stop asking questions. Because, hey, ladies, if this is real, if this is real, then everything's different. If what I'm telling you is the truth, and this is traditional Judaism, you can open up Maimonides, you can open up the Kuzari, you can open up Derech Hashem of Lutzato, which most of your staff have learned, where they talk about these things. And then ask yourself this question: if this is true, what does it mean for my life? How does it change things? How does it change how I make my choices? How does it change how I wake up in the morning and say Moda Ani? And how does it change how I go to sleep at night when I say the words B'yaday Hafkid Ruchi? Dear God, tonight I'm giving you 1/60th of my soul for safekeeping, to taste a little teeny-weeny bit of the world to come. Everything will be different. And I'm telling you now that if you go on this journey and you actually figure these things out, so your whole life is beautiful, your whole life is focused, you never get depressed as you get old. Especially if you have a great marriage and you and the person that you love, you're in this together, it doesn't scare you to get old together. Because the body, what is the body? This body that we have is not our real body. The real body is what we get back in the world to come. That's the body that we earned. The body we have now, it's like ridiculous. It's just, you know, no offense. You guys, ask your grandmothers. You're all beautiful. They'll tell you. But it doesn't last. As somebody once told me, it was actually when I was in college, Rose was her name. She was Irish, and she said, a woman's like a Christmas pudding. Everyone waits till the 26th. If you're not eaten by then, you grow old and moldy. That's pretty depressing. But the point is, you can say what you want, but the body goes downhill. That's the way it is. Your body's constantly changing. You're born looking like this, you know, this pretty little raisin, but you die a prune. That's life. There's nothing you can do about it. But if you're focused on the world to come, these things don't bother you. A little bit they do, but they don't bother you. Because you know the real body you get back. The real beauty in life just gets better and better as you get older. You know what it's like? You have a great marriage, and you have beautiful children, you have grandchildren that you enjoy, and your mind is focused on much bigger things. And everything is different. You look forward to getting old, and you realize that when a person dies, they're not really dead, because Jews do not believe in death. So I want to finish off and ask you, get the most out of the summer. You could not be in a better place. You're in a place with girls who are just like you, who are thirsting to ask questions and thirsting to get answers. And if you don't like an answer, ask again. And ask again and continue to ask. And then formulate your own opinion. And you'll see that this summer could be literally life-changing. The point is, when you get on a plane, you go back home, and it's going to happen in a couple of weeks. So everything's going to be different the way you do things. Your whole outlook's going to be different. But so much more exciting, so much more ennobling, so much more beautiful. And every Shabbos will be something you look forward to. So this really will be, excuse the cliche, best summer ever. So I want to wish you all a lot of success in asking questions, a lot of success in your journey, and then God winning, when we all get on that plane and we breathe in the monkey oxygen, we can taste a little bit of the world to come. That's forever and ever and ever. Thank you so much. You don't have to clap. I'm not the performing seal. Thank you. Do you have time for a question? Okay. Okay, so, oh, this is from my welcoming committee.